Blog Talk Radio.
It's Prime Time with the Rich Fan. Prime Time, PW Torch Friday. PW Torch Livecast hosted by senior columnist Bruce Mitchell. We will be joined momentarily by Prime Time Rich Fan. I have been waiting for a long time to say almost that. Gosh, years and years. Prime Time with the Rich Fan. Pretty close, pretty close. Anyway, there's breaking news out of WWE that Austin Aries asked for his release from 205 from the WWE Raw roster and has gotten it. News this afternoon. Waiting for a little more details, although he has put some messages up on social media before this that definitely made it seem as if he was happy with what's happening here. And so we will play that out, see how it's going. Also, if you could do me a favor, those of you who have been longtime wrestling fans know the name, Chris Cruz, longtime WCW announcer, did yeoman's work on WCW's famous pay-per-view When Worlds Collide, kind of an historic pay-per-view that opened the door for a lot of changes in the professional wrestling business, and his famous work with Terry Funk. Today is his birthday, and if you're on Twitter, go to at Crispy Cruiser. That's at CrispyCruiser. If you are downloading this show sometime after Friday, July 7th, 2017. Go ahead and wish him a happy belated birthday. No problem. So anyway, just wanted to get that out there too. And as I said, this weekend is WWE Great Balls of Fire. Turns out that Vince McMahon and I are both fans of Jerry Lee Lewis. I'm not sure that I would have named a pay-per-view of my multinational publicly traded corporation, Great Balls of Fire, in 2017, but why not? He's Vince McMahon. And main eventing with Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar ought to be good. And we're going to see how far that goes. And also the ambulance match between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman tonight. If you haven't seen it on, New Japan World Live, if you didn't see it on New Japan World Live on Sunday night, it's the second night of the California New Japan premieres, and it's on Axis. And unless I'm mistaken, it is headlined by, maybe they split it into 2 days, and I'm really not looking at it right now, so if you want to correct me, please do. But unless I'm mistaken, it is going to be headlined by an excellent Ishii versus Kenny Omega match for the United States title, and also the Young Bucks in their tribute to Herbert Meltzer, who I had the pleasure of spending some time with, last year at Waterloo, Iowa, at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, which Wade Keller and I will be attending again this year. So we look forward to seeing our friend Professor and lots of other folks up there. It's a really cool time. It's still time to get tickets. You can find them up on the Dan Gable Museum website and go ahead and do some of that. So anyway, we will be with that, you know, momentarily. So, anyway, just a second. The Mr. Smooth here for just a moment. And cool. All right. What else was I going to say? There was something else I wanted to plug. Not the most important thing of all. The most important thing is make sure you go up and wish Crispy Cruiser a happy birthday at Crispy Cruiser on Twitter. Anyway, the other thing is that the Wade Keller Show, make sure that you have signed up, subscribed to the Wade Keller Show so that you can follow his work. His work that's moving over to Podcast One on whatever device you get. I downloaded on Downcast. I've got my subscription up, but whatever app that you use to get your podcast on, make sure you do that. It doesn't change anything for VIP members, and we still very much, you know, he'll still be doing his content on the VIP side. I'll still be doing Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, co-hosted by Wade Keller, The Fix with Todd Martin, co-hosted by Wade Keller. Lots of good stuff on the VIP side, including the newsletter. So make sure you get a hold of that. I mean, make sure you get a hold of that. But there seems to be a little bit of confusion. But basically, the stuff he does for free now, I'm trying to say this diplomatically, we'll move over to Podcast One. And some other changes are coming, changes for the better, I think, for all the content. But I don't think you're going to lose very much, if anything, at all. So let's go to Prime Time with the Rich Fan.
Hey, Bruce, just amusing sorry myself for my now. Tardiness.
Yeah, so we need a report.
It was excellent, and
What is it? What is it?
Oh, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man Homecoming. So let's hear the report. Spoiler-free, though. I think I want to go see this movie.
Oh, yeah, spoiler-free. I thought because it's set in high school, it does a lot of the stuff that some of the other movies couldn't. I mean, they were set there, but it was usually like senior year. He's a sophomore, so you have a lot more room in future movies to see him grow up. Marissa Tomei is, as I described to my wife, the problematic, like, in this case, aunt, instead of the problematic mom as a coach I've had to deal with, because you have that one player whose mom is a divorcee or a widow, and all of his friends magically want to hang out with him.
Wait a minute. Aunt May, Marissa Tomei plays Aunt May?
Yes, sir.
Holy smoke. Marissa Tomei, yeah. You may remember all of her from The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, but and from Seinfeld and a lot of other things, but Oscar winner. But wow, that's an interesting choice. I mean, I'm not against it, but that's an interesting choice. I grew up with Aunt May being about 105, so in the comics.
Yeah, so they went with more of the Bendis Ultimate type stuff.
Right.
So
yeah.
Peter's younger. My favorite casting in the whole thing was Pittsburgh's own Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Yes. Batman.
I mean, yes. Batman's playing the Vulture, and that blows my mind.
Yeah, it's been 30 years, you know, and he's a good actor, and he can play villain really well. I always liked him in Night Shift, but that's speaking of a long time ago, but yeah.
I'm a big fan of that movie as well.
Yeah.
That and Running Scared, I think, are very underrated.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The movie, I thought it was excellent. It's got, I don't want to, with no spoilers, I counted 5 people either in the movie or down the road that, because, you know, I'm talking to you, so it's not like I have to hide my comic book fandom, but like, as soon as I heard their names or I saw what they were doing in the background, even though they might have not have been like villains now, I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. I always like to pull those threads.
Yeah, and I really like the fact that, and this will be the last thing, and I know there's callers and stuff. Two things I really liked. One, that because we're in a 2017 lens, a lot of the characters, there were complaints online about characters being changed race-wise, like Flash Thompson is Indian. And that, it works so well, and I'm so, like, much like with Jinder Mahal, people get to see themselves in comics in a way that 50, 60 years ago you couldn't. And I think for people who get mad at canon being changed, you have to accept that some of that canon also was because of the culture that it was in at the time it was created.
Yeah, you know, I hear that sometimes with this stuff, and there's a couple of things about that. One of them is, like you said, Spider-Man is just is 57 years old. I think he's about my age.
Yeah.
Steve Ditko and Stan Lee, you know, created him and originally set him in high school. And the first, the Ditko issues are just tremendously well done. The first issues of Spider-Man, but yeah, it was, you know, it was all white. So if you did an all white high school in an all white New York City in 2017, it would look really odd. And, you know, the world does change, and the world does change. And I know Stan Lee wouldn't object to any of this. And even the Stan Lee back then, and I would assume Steve Ditko wouldn't either. It's hard to tell. He's odd, but but it's also worth saying that, that it was Stan Lee and Jack Kirby who had the first multicultural, team book, and that was Sergeant Fuhrer and the Howling Commandos, including, I've said this before on the show, including a gay character, but multicultural across World War II troop across all the, across a lot of races. So, it's settle down. If it's a good movie and works, it's a good movie and works. And if it's a bad movie and doesn't work, it's not because of that. It's because it's a bad movie that didn't work. So,
And it's, to me, like, to your point with that, I was really happy when this started online a couple of months ago before the movie even came out. And Stan Lee said, when I was describing it was Kirby, right?
Yes, Jack Kirby, yes.
Yeah, when me and Jack were describing Peter Parker, he was a kid from Queens. We didn't ever say race. So if he down the road, like when Miles Morales or whatever, like these are the main thing about him is he's a kid who had loss and he learned with great power comes great responsibility. We never said he had to be white. And I think that sent people even further, the people who were looking for things like that, even further over the edge. And for me as a lifelong comic fan, it was the opposite of effect of seeing a guy like Hulk Hogan get caught saying the N-word. It's like, all right, this guy gets it. I feel like the 30 years I've spent reading comics hasn't been spent in vain supporting someone who really didn't care if I bought their book.
Well, I could say that Stan Lee used to write stories back in the late 60s, early 70s for Marvel. And he was he created the Falcon. He was putting in black characters. And of course, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, really Jack Kirby, created the Black Panther. And Jack Kirby was like, we need a black superhero, and created Wakanda and gave him this huge, backstory that to make him a big deal. But also, he would do these, Stan Lee would do these, like, and I remember as a kid reading these, and I mean like 9 or 10 reading these things, and Daredevil and in Captain America of these, let's get along. People should get along with each other. It wasn't confrontational and it was a certain type of, but the people were drawn accurately. They were African Americans were included in things. And that was kind of the start of it. The white writers kind of, and the white artists trying to bring that in. And then there was Billy Graham, the early on, there were some African American artists, but Billy Graham early on, who was African American artist, and some other folks, like when they brought in Luke Cage and started opening those doors, early on, but not as early as maybe they should have, I'd say. But trying to get, and because they saw that, they saw that there's a market for that. They were looking at, there was a market for it in the movies. The movies exploded with heroes and black, what was called black exploitation and music and all the rest of it. It's like, well, we can make comics are always about, let's find the genre that can make you some money and let's go chase it. And that's what they would do. So, that's definitely there. I'm interested to see bring them back to high school, 'cause that's where his roots are. The insecure high school kid. You don't see that very often anymore. How did it fit into, I'm killing all this, but how did it fit into the, movie Marvel universe, because that's the first real, I mean, except for that one thing in Civil War, Captain America Civil War, that's the first real Spider-Man and produced by the Marvel Universe people.
Yeah, it was, so I don't want to spoil anything, but the movie starts with his perspective of everything leading up to that Civil War scene. And he's a kid in 2017, so he's doing selfies and recording himself in the car talking to Tony and all these sorts of silly things that a 14 or 15 year old would do if they had superpowers and Iron Man said, come with me to fight Captain America.
Ah, okay. Cool.
And so, it fits in. Now, the biggest problem I think for Sony, and I know, I mean, I this could be the comic book hour. We could talk for hours about this. The biggest issue I see for Sony is back in 2011 when they were making the third of the original series of Spider-Man, they were so hard up for money, they sold the rights back to Marvel for merchandise. So the whole reason they let Marvel produce it is because even though these movies would make them $700-800 million, they are either breaking even or losing money because of the amount they spend in production or other failed projects in their, you know, company. Kind of like with WWE and the WWE Films division. You can make a crap load of money with wrestling, but if you're making 8 Marines a year, you're going to lose a little bit of that profit margin. So Marvel is making all of the toys and making all of the money off of it, and Sony is making some of the money, well, all of the money from the movie, and some of it based on whatever agreement they have, a little might go to Marvel. But at the end of the day, the more, it's kind of like a bear hug or a sleeper. The more they've allowed themselves to get ingratiated into the Marvel comic universe, the more likely it is they're going to lose that franchise at some point because they can't afford to keep making them.
Right. Yeah. That, and it all goes
even a
back
little
to
thing, like in the commercial, they had, he was walking, you know, in the one commercial they show on TV, he's in his outfit in his room and his friend sees him as Spider-Man and drops the Lego. The Lego is a Death Star. Disney owns Lucasfilm.
Right.
Like, all
yeah.
of these little things are just stacked in on top of it.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's cool. Did your son go?
No, I actually went today because I want him to go tomorrow when I'm done doing, I have to do some work with my job tomorrow. So after work, I'm going to take him to see it. But I heard some complaints online that there were a couple of phrases that were very confusing for young kids, but it was so quick. I can make a noise and he had no idea what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah. A little distraction. I want to thank you for holding the fort for me last week while I was at the beach with my family. As a matter of fact, I went to see Wonder Woman about the same time the show was, I think, well, it was ending as the show was starting. I went to see Wonder Woman with my family. I liked Wonder Woman. I was really impressed. Wonder Woman is really hard to do. So that's that was cool. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sorry, listeners. If you guys, I know you guys are listening because guys like Boris and Darrell and Brian, all sorts of guys who call on the East Coast cast love comics and they join in too. What did you think of, what did you think of the scene going into the No Man's Land with her where like the director mentioned that in her opinion, that's when she becomes Wonder Woman. That was probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, number one, Gal Gadot, however you say her name, she was awesome. I mean, she was really, she really had that movie star charisma. I thought there were a lot of smart things they did to avoid things I've always thought were problematic in the comics and without mm-hmm. changing her too much. And yeah, I like that, but, we'll have to talk about this at some other time, but Wonder Woman has a lot of really weird roots as far as comic book characters go. And as far as very, very famous comic book characters go, and I thought they handled it really well. But yeah, that was cool. I didn't guess the villain. I was thinking somebody else, and then but I did figure out the weapon. That was like, okay, I know what that is.
Yeah.
But I thought that and I very much enjoyed what's her name from House of Cards. I thought it was good to see her play in that same like just tightly controlled way, but instead of playing, Robin Wright Penn. Instead of playing a manipulative bad guy, she was playing, a good guy, but kind of with some of the same characteristics. I thought that was, she's good. I mean, she's pretty serious. So, all right, you ready to take some phone calls about whatever it is this show's about?
Yes, sir.
All right, Prime Time with the Rich Fan. I wonder if someone's got to figure out why I said that. But anyway, but I wouldn't think it was someone from Pittsburgh. So, anyway, all right, let's go to our friend Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast. And first,
how you doing today, Bruce? How you doing today, Rich?
Pretty good, my man.
Okay. Like the discussion that y'all were talking about comics. I don't mind it. But I'm gonna keep it nice and sweet. I want to get y'all thoughts on the pay per view that's coming up this weekend. What y'all think about Joe and Brock? And do they have a lot to live up with? Coming from just seeing New Japan for 2 days and everybody talking about those matches.
I don't think they have a lot to live up to about New Japan, although I think that's going to be an issue for them because they get WWE is very competitive, very jealous like when attention, they think that all the attention in the wrestling world belongs to them because they dominate it. And if someone comes, and particularly coming to California and doing it. It's going to be interesting to see how those things play out. But there's, you know, I never saw ratings for New Japan, for, you know, New Japan Saturday live show. But they're, you know, they're drawing 200,000 people or so to watch these shows. So that means that, you know, the 3 million out of 3 million, let's say for Raw, that means the rest of the people aren't watching it. So, or, you know, not very many of the rest of them are watching it. So, you know, they don't have to live up to that except for the pride of wanting to. But I think Joe and, Brock Lesnar is going to have that big match feel. And I think it's going to be, you know, bruising, and it's going to be a Joe match, but a good one. You know, I mean, a Joe match, but a good one, but a Lesnar match and a good one. You know, a lot of hard hitting, a lot of suplexes, a lot of tough stuff. And, you know, well, you know, I guess there's a possibility that Joe could win, but I very much think Brock Lesnar is going to win. And then how that sets up SummerSlam. To me, the biggest question I have coming out of this pay-per-view is do they go with does it seem like they're going with Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam instead of at WrestleMania? And they may, but there's a lot of little things that I think, you know, if Joe beats Brock Lesnar and then you set up Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, then you've got Joe with the Universal title, who's beaten Roman Reigns twice through some circumstances, but still he's beaten him and choked him out and all that, for Roman Reigns to then slay. And, you know, you've got, you know, he slayed Brock Lesnar and he goes back. And then you've also got rematch between Brock Lesnar and, Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe. So, there's a lot, they've laid out the cards well, I think. There's a lot that you can, do with that. Rich?
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. And one thing I thought about is if, let's say for the sake of argument, Joe did win, if they were to have a SummerSlam three-way between him, Roman, and Brock, and say through chicanery, Joe wins by distraction finish, choke out of Roman, so now he's beating him another time. Brock hasn't lost two matches in a row, so he stays relatively strong, and Joe looks like this monster. You now have a mountain for Roman to climb. And if you want to get him... But let's say this is, again, a variant of what they did his first push, where they thought it was going to be WrestleMania, and then they pushed it off and had it be Survivor Series that year. If they had him win against Joe by Survivor Series and set up something with Cena by Mania, you've pushed off your end game storyline maybe by a year, but you still got there. Or you accelerated it by a year, pardon. And that might work, but I don't know. I think this is... like Bruce said, I don't think they have to live up to New Japan. I think as ardent fans, we'll pay attention to that stuff. And on Twitter, a lot of folks will pay attention to that stuff. But for WWE, it doesn't pay, much like with the TNA stuff, it doesn't pay to outwardly mention that they're trying to keep up with New Japan in terms of in-ring work. So they're not going to say it. If anything, you're going to hear more of top that, you can't top the entertainment value, you can't top the showmanship we have. And they'll, you know, focus on that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's smart too. I mean, that's, you know, I think that, I think the things behind the scenes are going to be there. Right back to the callers after word from this message.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to The Wade Keller Show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Downcast, coming up in, I think, about 10 days now. And hope to see everybody, and hope to see as many people as I can. I don't know if we'll see everybody. It'd be great to see everybody at Waterloo, Iowa, for the National Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremonies. Had a good time the last 2 years and really looking forward to this year. Let's go back quickly to Darrell. Anything else you got for us?
Last thing, reports about Dixie Carter filming on WWE Network, and they put that out there. What you guys think? And that's it for me, and y'all have a nice night.
I had not heard that. What would she be filming?
I hadn't either. I don't know. Maybe something for the former TNA guys, as far as an informed person from that area without a tie that can help bury them, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she could do, you know, she could talk about AJ Styles. She could talk about who hasn't had Joe Angle. Yeah, that's true. So that's definitely there. Kevin Owens' legacy DVD just came out, but yeah, I could see that happening. It wouldn't be a bad move. Wouldn't be a bad move. And I know.
And I don't know if you knew this, Bruce, but as of what, like a half hour ago or maybe 40 minutes ago, Austin Aries was released.
Yes, while you were actually running around with your family, we did talk about that just for a moment at the beginning of the show.
Oh, darn it.
But yeah, it's interesting and kind of surprising that he would do that. But, you look at the Young Bucks, you look at – and it's things we talk about in Bruce Mitchell Audio Show will be coming for PW Torch VIP subscribers this weekend. But, you know, we talk about this. But one of the more interesting things going on in wrestling is established names finding their way to an independent schedule that fits their life, that fits how much time they want to be on the road, and fits maybe making more money than they might on a full-time schedule in WWE. And Cody Rhodes, who'll be on the show tonight in a little bit on Access, definitely is someone that's pioneering this. And so maybe Austin Aries has figured out that his stock has risen with his good work against Neville, and he's not happy with where he was going to be in the 205 division, and or being in the 205 division and not being on Raw very much, and wanted to make hay while the sun shines. Also, a little beaten up, but there's a little bit of maybe not going on with that. Maybe he's got an idea of some places to go. So I don't know. Global Force Wrestling is interested in him. If New Japan's interested in him, or someone else is. But he did really good. I mean, I thought he did the best work of his career with WWE the last year or so.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the problems is, as I mentioned with Travis on Wednesday, when people talk about folks like Ricochet and like they want him to come to WWE, they see the writing on the wall when it comes to being put in 205 Live. And they don't want to be just the cruiserweight. They want to be a wrestler, because when you're a wrestler, you make money. When you're a cruiserweight, you show up at every show and you take twice the bumps for half the glory.
And by glory, you mean money. Yeah, that's a good point. Plug you and Travis, please. Rich. Plug you and Travis. Hello.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I hit mute accidentally on my phone.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. So East Coast Cast, Wednesdays, typically from 6 to 8:30. For the live cast portion, and then I do the VIP with Travis Bryant, Torch columnist, and we go from, well, for you guys it's like mere seconds after the free version ends, but for us it's somewhere between 10 p.m. Eastern and midnight, or 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock if he is pushing my buttons, and we try to talk about everything you guys want to, and it's not necessarily minivan friendly, so listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, I thought China died. What's the big deal about China this week? I mean, you know, we already knew what happened to her and her time in WWE and the Attitude Era and all that. I mean, but anyway, I understood y'all talked about China a lot less on the last show.
We did? Okay, here's the problem. Travis typically catches me. Wednesdays are a very difficult day for me in the work week. And we might have talked about China, but sometimes I do the show, and I got to tell you, and most listeners know who listen to the show, I'm semi-conscious. So I will listen or read back the notes I send him, and I'm like, I don't remember talking about any of that stuff. So we could have talked about
it. Oh, wait a minute. It wasn't China. It was Black China. Oh, my bad.
Oh, Black China. Oh, that was Cam and Travis. Definitely.
Oh, that was Cam and Travis. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We talked about we had some emails about the comparing WWE to like the Attitude Era without Russo and stuff like that, and then we argued about Secret Empire and a host of other things. I mean, folks, listen, it's on. It's on.
Let me guess. Travis is for Stievel, and not against Stievel.
No. He actually is, for once, not being. He's not being difficult. He, if anything, he's judgmental of Namor, because Namor gave up the Cosmic Cube, and
yeah.
He uses Mutie way too liberally in his conversations discussing the X-Men and Tian. So we have to kind of talk to him a little bit about being a little bit culturally sensitive at Torch Tower.
So Namor or Travis?
Oh no, Travis.
Travis
he read God Loves Man Kills, and the lesson he learned from one of the seminal comics I enjoyed in my young life is
yeah.
I agree with Stryker. So
that's what he learned?
No way. That's what he learned. He's like, those filthy muties got what they deserve.
Oh Lord. All right.
Well. Yeah.
That's what he gets for. I mean, that's what happens when two guys hang out as much as he and Wade Keller started hanging out. I mean, it's bad influences. All right, let's go to 615. 615, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce and Rich, this is a Kineos LVIP member. I want to kind of confirm what Darrell said in his last call. What it is that she appeared on what is going to be a WWE Network special, WWE 24 Kurt Angle, and is actually going to air this Monday night at the Raw. She was brought in to basically do like an interview session. They asked a bunch of questions about Kurt Angle and so forth. So obviously they're going to probably mention, a little bit of Time and Impact. I don't know how much into detail, but they did interview her, and she's going to appear on the WWE Network on Monday. It was Mike Johnson from PW Insider, a friend of mine, sent it to me. A link up and on the current DNA, basically. So that's what you're basically saying, is that Dixie Carter will be on the WWE Network Monday night after Raw for one of those WWE 24 specials.
Oh, cool. That makes sense. I mean, it really does. And, she'll get some publicity out of it. It'll be, she'll look positive, and it's better than, better than the kind of publicity she's gotten the last year before Anthem bought Impact. So yeah, that makes sense. Thanks. Good deal.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me, Bruce.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Real quick, it makes perfect sense to me, because if you think about it, at the end of the day, when it comes to Global Force, Impact Wrestling, TNA, or whatever you want to call it, the devil they know is the person they dislike more than the devil they don't. And I mean by that, Jeff Jarrett is probably never going to be on Vince's good side. So at least Dixie can be seen as the woman who is just, tricked by these darn wrestlers into doing all these things to thwart Vince from owning every inch of wrestling territory. Whereas Jeff Jarrett is the I'm sure Vince has very choice words for him.
I always thought that Jeff, he may be getting too old for this, but he'd be brought back and he'd be Eric Bischoff. In other words, they'd use him for as long as they could in different roles, and he'd get beaten a lot and he'd be humiliated. And then this man would pick him up and throw him into a dumpster. That's what he did with Eric Bischoff in the end of the storyline. So I always figured that he would, that an annuity for, Jeff Jarrett would be to go back, wrestle, and get jobbed out and get crushed, but knowing that he'd get well paid for the privilege, so that Vince could tell his, Vince could tell his story of, kicking everybody's ass in wrestling. So, yeah, that's kind of where that is. All right, anything else for us?
Yeah, about three little quick things. I recommend the Downcast app for those that want to download an app. I did go see a movie today. It was not the Spider-Man movie, but I would highly recommend it if you like Hitman related movies. It's called Baby Driver. It's actually made by Sony, of all things, and I know that it was made by Sony because I saw one of those PS Vita consoles. They were kind of doing one of the plug-in deals. But really, what I want to talk about is NXT. I just finished watching the 400th episode of NXT. I was really, really impressed with what I saw. It was just two matches, a lot of promos, a lot of interviews and vignettes and so forth who kind of go in between the two matches, because you had the NXT championship match with Rude and Robert Strong, and I just thought the way it ended was so perfect. You know what I mean? It was a case where, you know, Rune can lead as champion, but Roderick Strong came out, you know, at least looking good. You know, he told a really good story. In fact, both of them told good stories with the Cassius and Theo Tommy. He's obviously leading to a match in Brooklyn, I think.
I think they've done a great job of identifying what the, you know, what Roderick Strong needed. I mean, everybody knew his, you know, as far as like technically and his wrestling, his athleticism and wrestling ability, he's excellent, but he was always missing a little something character wise. And WWE looked at that and went, let's see what we can do with it. And I agree with folks. Those promos, the videos ahead of time really were good. I'm looking forward to seeing that match. Rich.
First of all, I want to co-sign the Baby Driver, and I think, Bruce, you would like it in particular because of the music used for the movie. One of the main characters has tinnitus, so he listens to music to drown out the sound, and he listens to everything from, like, the 70s and on, and he has a very broad spectrum of musical interests. So he is the soundtrack to the movie, which made it very interesting, which Edgar Wright always does. But as far as the NXT episode, yeah, I loved it. I thought that it was simple. The one thing I didn't like, and this is just me being persnickety, I guess, I didn't like the promo by Robert Roode because he was like, your fairy tale is going to get a glorious conclusion. To me, that means he wins the title. Like, how would that not be a glorious conclusion? Like, you're trying too hard when you're tying your gimmick in when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're taught to do that, and that's part of it. But, yeah, I think that, yeah, and also I don't like heels calling their shots exactly. And that's what that sounds like. But yeah, you know, that's and boy, you know, Glorious did that theme music really help Bobby Roode. So far, he's we'll see where that stuff. But I like the series. I like that it, you know, that Strong looks strong, and then but Roode wins, and then because it's not time for Roode to lose, and I don't know that Roderick Strong's the guy to beat him. So that does make sense. That's pretty good.
It's interesting too with NXT that with WWE, so often we talk about transitional champions. Like if people want to consider, say, gender a transitional champion, it's fine. But it's very rare now that they've gotten the ball rolling with NXT that we get a true transitional champion in that sense. It's always a very meticulous, this person's winning to lead to this person beating them, leading to this happening. There isn't ever, at least after, you know, Balor got it, maybe even a little bit before, there isn't ever going to be, I think, anytime soon, that person that is the, let's see if it works, because they know it works well before they give that person the belt, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. A lot of times, you can adjust on the fly, but I think it's better to have that strong, we've seen it in NXT, we've seen it, and you see it in New Japan, Lord knows, it's like, to have those plans meticulously laid out, and then you're ready to take advantage of something instead of just, you know, jumping all the time at every, you know, at every ghost. You said you had three things, what else do you have for us?
Well, that was basically it. There's one little quick thing, going back to the last week's episode. I noticed that they have a new superstar, Velveteen Dream. You know, it's kind of like, I wouldn't necessarily say it's in the same vein as what Goldust was 20 years ago, or even what, let's say, Orlando Jordan was during his run at Impact. But the characters, you can tell just from the look of them. I mean, I first saw him on the screen and just, you know, in that squash match. You know, it was just clear that they were trying to set a character that, you know, not necessarily what you would call, you know, a gay or homosexual type perception. And I wanted to get your opinions on what you think of the Velveteen wrestler slash character and how you think he's been portrayed so far on the NXT roster. And that is really all I had. And you guys have a good rest of the night.
Appreciate the call. I'll just take this time to mention that I wrote about something similar with this. Oh, and by the way, Rich, I highly recommend everybody go on Twitter. Who's on Twitter? Go to Twitter at Crispy Cruiser and wish Chris Cruz a happy birthday. In fact, I would consider it a favor if you folks would do that. And also, but anyway, Cruz tweeted me a question. The former WCW announcer tweeted me a question during SmackDown. who would write this? And there was, and I used that as an opportunity to write about what I see in some changes in SmackDown, and they fit in with the caller's question. I want to watch this guy. I want to watch the Velveteen Dream before I really comment. But Rich, what do you have to say about?
I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when they first started putting them on TV. With regard to, I think it was one of the weeks while you were on, I talked about the idea of nuance and race and ethnicity and sexuality. I think the biggest issue that's going on with Velveteen is he's supposed to be a copy of Prince, and I don't think they get the sexual magnetism and asexuality at the same time of Prince to pull it off. He's doing fine. But I think my issue isn't his NXT persona. As soon as he gets to the main roster, he's going to be a gay bait joke, and I don't like what I'm going to see.
Yeah, I grew up with, a huge Prince fan. I was on the Prince bandwagon before Purple Rain, and the androgyny was a big thing in music. And I'm a Stones fan, and those guys in the 70s, those guys in the 60s, Jagger and Richards both, that's what they were about. And so I'm pretty familiar, pretty familiar with that idea of David Bowie. And it's not so much, there's more to it than that. And so we'll see. But yeah, you better have some, you better be skinny, and you better have some charisma, and that's to pull that off. I definitely see where you're coming from with that. So, let's go to 647. You're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hi, this is Mark from Ontario. Thank you for taking my call.
Mark, one day I'm going to get this right. I apologize, okay. But yeah.
I don't call all the time, so it's okay.
Yeah, but I appreciate you. You contribute a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. And I've got an email to send you for your show over the weekend, which is more of a historical perspective. But my question for tonight is, I'm curious about what the finish is for the Seth and Bray match, and does that make any of them stronger going into SummerSlam? Because they both seem kind of flat to me at the moment. What are your thoughts there?
That's a really good question. I think that if they go out and have, I think those two, you're right, they're both flat. If they go out and have a match and it's just a good wrestling match and Seth wins, or it's just a good wrestling match and Bray cheats at the end and wins, I don't know that just keeps them flat. I don't know there's anything there. This one, to me, might be one where, and I think sometimes you need to do this. I mean, that they do something with it. In other words, there's someone who, to me, you always hear Bray Wyatt, is Sister Abigail going to debut? But this would be a time to do it. I mean, or something, and not just Luke Harper or Eric Rowan, something where there's a change in the status, and I would say of Bray Wyatt, where there's something new added to the act. There's something that Seth Rollins couldn't have seen coming that causes Seth Rollins as a babyface who was going to win the match to lose and to go to the next chapter in the feud. But I just don't think that – I don't think Bray Wyatt's in the desert promo. I like it as far as Bray Wyatt promos go, but that vague stuff is just not enough anymore. So, I'm interested to see what happens with this and whether they care enough to do something with this or whether they just keep these guys kind of where they are. Rich?
One of the things I think Bray is missing with the spooky is the tough. As you're talking about that desert skit, the one thing I thought about was I loved back about 15, 20 years ago when the Undertaker put Big Show under his wing and told the story how he bought him to the desert and told him to fill the tank halfway and left him in the most craziest part of Death Valley with rattlesnakes. And he came back with a new pair of snakeskin boots. Like, that was spooky Taker, but also I'm going to kick your butt Taker. Bray is just spooky as crap, but then he always gets beat up. He's the guy at Hot Topic that pretends to be the tough guy. And then you bring him out back and it's not going to end well for him. So until I see
are you beating up people at Hot? Wait a minute. You're beating up people at Hot Topic.
I can either confirm.
Now, I'm a little older. I'm a little older. So, I mean, I know what Hot Topic is. I've got to go buy my, Super Kick Party shirt there. But I haven't done that yet. But, I mean, maybe it hadn't come to Greensboro. But you're beating up people at the back of Hot Topic.
No, I might have seen it happen. I cannot confirm or deny participating in such a dangerous practice of doing things.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
This isn't right. I mean, Mark for Edit Wade.
Yes. All right. Speaking of Mark for Edit, we'll be right back after this message.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you.
All right, last caller recommended the Downcast app, which is what I use for my podcast, and to get subscriptions to podcasts. And Wade Keller, if you use Downcast, if you use Stitcher, if you use iTunes, go up and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Show on Podcast One. And if you got a minute, go over to iTunes and give it 5 stars. I can promise you Wade Keller's podcast will never be better. The new iTunes podcast will never be better than right now, because once he starts, anyway, 5 stars. Go ahead and give it if you don't mind, just as a favor to us. And appreciate those of you who shop through pwtorch.com through Amazon. That this grassroots organization, every bit does help. Let's go to our friend in Australia, Jason. Welcome back to the Prime Time with Fan Man.
Yeah, that's got a good ring to it. Prime Time with the Rich Fan. Thanks, Bruce.
With the Rich Fan, yes.
Yeah, Rich. I remember that Rich. Now you got me all confused here, Bruce. Good work. Rich, I remember that promo. I remember that promo you're talking about with Big Show and The Undertaker. I think that was like in 99 when they were like a brief tag team. And I remember that promo specifically. So it's interesting that you brought that up. I want to talk about, obviously, the news you just broke earlier about Austin Aries. So, man, I don't know the story there, but geez, that is a wasted opportunity. If they don't have 205 Live, is Austin Aries still with the WWE? I mean, to me, I saw him as a genuine great guy to promote in the intercontinental title scene. A lot of charisma, carries himself well, can obviously go in the ring, great mic work. Do you think 205 Live really burnt him?
I think I think he's got everything. He can talk. He carries himself well. Great wrestler. He was one of the best, if not just by, I don't mean by drawing, but by just my eyes critically. He was one of the best baby faces in the whole business when he was, leading up to his match with Neville. I love that promo where he took off his glasses. I mean, I just thought, man, that's a baby face. But I also, there is some point where, it's too bad that 205 wasn't doing better. That, Neville's done better, and so has Aries, but still just mired in this boring muck of, well, these guys will do flips for you, or these guys will do spots for you. So, and Cedric Alexander's like this too. Could be on the main roster doing big things. But, and if they were just, the whole division was elevated, then you wouldn't have this problem for Austin Aries. But I remember going to see Austin Aries at a TNA live event, and I'm sorry, I was struck with how small he is, about how short he is. And I think you put him in the ring with folks that are near his height, it's not a problem at all, because you're just watching as comparatively it's right there. But when you put him in the ring with other WWE superstars, with Miz or whoever, he comes across, he's going to come across as a lot smaller and a lot, I shouldn't say smaller, shorter.
walking to the ring, I was just I was really kind of stunned. And I'm used to wrestlers being shorter than what I think. I've said this before. Other professional athletes always, when I see them in person or stand near them or something, they're always taller and bigger than I thought. And college basketball players too, and college football players, but pro wrestlers, it's different. And the exaggeration works there. But yeah, I don't know. I wish that they would treat 205 or anybody that does cruiserweights as, and at least they haven't mixed them in with the heavyweights. I'm really glad for that. But just that it's just as important, that it's just as prestigious to hold that title, and that they have someone at the top that's charismatic enough to carry all that. A couple of guys, and Austin Aries in the right situation could have been one of those guys. Rich.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I'm just thinking about all of the talent that they're kind of shoehorning into whatever they want to for that moment, and they're losing a little something. I know Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, and I'm sure you did, but I also want to give my condolences to him and his family, as well as the Hart family, because Smith Hart was actually, like, for me as a non-wrestling journalist, I'm just a fan who happens to really do a cool radio show. Smith Hart spoken off and on to me for the last, like, 10 years on Facebook. I don't know how he ever got my name, but he would just send me messages and stuff, so I thought he was a cool guy.
Very interesting
when
character.
It comes, yeah, he was out there. Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, I took him as like the friend or cousin that would just send you like the craziest things, and you're just like, thanks for that, Smith. I appreciate it. Now why did you send it to me? But to answer your question about Austin Aries, I thought about it when I watched Tanahashi wrestle Billy Gunn, and I've never thought of even look. I'm 5'9".
Oh, we didn't talk about that. Yeah. Yeah.
Even standing next to Tanahashi, if you guys look at my profile picture, that was my birthday 3 years ago when I went to Philadelphia when they first came here to watch him wrestle, because he's my favorite Japanese wrestler currently. And I got to take a picture with him, and that's been my profile for the last 3 years. I'm 5'9". He's probably maybe an inch taller than me, if that, in shoes. And so seeing him against Billy Gunn look like a little person, it annoyed me. Because on top of that, he then did the test of strength where Gunn made himself look even larger. And I'm like, this is one of the top three guys in their company. They're making him look like a why are you doing
it? Like, you can watch this match. If you're listening live, you can watch this match on Access in just a few minutes during the New Japan show. And if you're not listening to it live, I'm sure you can. Maybe you DVR'd it. Maybe you've seen it. But yeah, it's yeah.
Or if you go to New Japan World. It's on there.
Yeah, or New Japan World, absolutely. That's where I watched it. And I know you did too. Cody, I thought Cody worked well in his situation, and I thought that you know, there was just nothing to do with Billy Gunn. It was just a style mismatch and a time and a career mismatch. I didn't think he did anything terrible or didn't try, but it didn't work.
And yeah, so I think it was the same thing with Austin Aries. He walks down the ring. He does look pretty small. Like that WrestleMania run when I was watching that in Orlando, the breadth of how big the arena was, and then as he's walking down, you could see how small he was. That also probably didn't help. Whereas a person like Neville, even though he might be on the shorter side, he is, you know, he's a dude that's pretty big in terms of just musculature, so it kind of offsets it. And so, yeah, I completely agree with that thought.
All right, Jeff.
I understand what you're saying, but I just thought he really carried himself a lot taller than what he really is. I understand the small part. I mean, here in Perth a couple of weeks ago, the Young Bucks were in town with the House of Hardcore, and the line for their merchandise, like people just lining up to see them. These guys are small, but they've got a ton of charisma, and the crowd will go mental for them. So I understand what you're saying in relation to the small bit, but still, I always thought he just carried himself a bit bigger. I mean, I just would have loved to have seen him. He would have given some real depth to that Intercontinental title scene, and he could have been that guy that, you know, is the up-and-coming one, using the Intercontinental title as a stepping stone rather as main eventers go back to it when they've got nothing to do. But I do understand what you're saying. A couple of more points. You know, with Sami Zayn, I thought it was interesting. We've been critical about the way that he's been portrayed as sort of that goofy type that the cool baby faces were sort of like snickering, oh, look at this guy here. But I thought this week it worked really well when he was sort of had those little antics against, you know, obnoxious heels like Maria and Mike. And I thought that worked well. It was actually more endearing. So it's just interesting that when he was playing, when he plays that role with the cool baby faces, he comes across like a bit of a, you know, uncool goof. But do it against heels that we find obnoxious, it actually became more endearing. So I kind of enjoyed that little segment before he went out there. I thought that was quite funny. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I wrote about it for the PW Torch newsletter this week as part of what I wrote about SmackDown. Rich, am I allowed to say the word cockblock on the air?
I think you did, so I think you are.
Oh, okay, because that was what he was doing to Maria and Mike Canales. But I very much agree with you, Jason, that it seems to work better when he's doing it, when he's using that on purpose against heels instead of making the baby faces kind of look weak and making him, you know, he's a baby face, but why should I like him? He's using his superpower of annoying people to take the heel off his game. If they follow that way, I think that might be better.
And just a couple of more points. What are your guys' opinion on Titus O'Neil? I've been a fan of his since day one, and I thought it was an interesting part of his character where, I thought he was playing sort of like the Don King role, but he actually got into the ring and defended Apollo Crews against Braun Strowman, and the crowd seemed to be with him, like they actually wanted him to go in there. They were doing that chant that he does, and he actually stood up to Braun Strowman, so he was defending his client. And I just always thought, I don't know why they've never gone more in with him. It's like they give him these top star pushes. And I always felt like with him that the crowd were just looking for a good enough excuse to get behind him. Now, I realized he had that promo where he stuffed up that time. And, you know, he's got a bit of a, you know, he's got like a little bit different type of charisma to him. But I just thought, you look at him, he looks like he's money. He's got a good presence to him. I've just always wondered about him.
Yeah, a couple of things. I've always thought he's older, his knees are bad, but he looks like a badass, and you're just, you know, no matter what kind of comedy he does and what kind of dumb things they have him do, and he can talk a little bit, he's got a big, strong voice, that, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at Braun Strowman and you're looking at him going, hey, this could be a fight. Forget about these storylines. This could be, you know, that primal thing of, I want to see these two guys fight, and they had that moment. On Raw, I thought that was good. I have a real appreciation for the fraternity cry that he's doing, and I think that guy, he really does do a lot of work during the week to make the world a better place, pro bono charity work, and being a role model. So I just think that they ought to feature him as a special attraction, not a special attraction that earns money, but as a role model that wins his matches, that makes a speech and tells kids to do better, whatever it is that he's going to do, and take that, he's good at that, and have him use the fraternity, his fraternity ties, and that should, you know, I think you've got something there instead of like pushing him into this role, whatever it is, they're pushing him all the time, but I never know why and what they're trying to do with him. Rich?
Yeah, I agree. I think we were talking earlier about the Marvel stuff, and I always thought of Titus, if they wanted to push him, and I know his wrestling ability isn't the best, he could be their Luke Cage. He is doing in real life what Luke Cage was doing, focusing on the community, standing up when he could, and just trying to do right as much as he can. And when you look at his TED Talk and you hear about the history of how he even came to this earth, not in a superhero sense, but like how he was born, the circumstances around him. They're pretty troubling and pretty, like most people, if you hear that story, you wouldn't expect him to have the man that's going around trying to do as much good as he is right now. And so I take very, especially seeing him as a person of color, taking the umbrage and the crap that he has from Vince McMahon the last 2 years, to the point where his friend Dave Bautista, who got him in, said, you know, you could quit this. And he truly is using his platform in the WWE to allow that celebrity to help him do more good. And when I hear stories, like I mentioned last week while you were out, about Baron Corbin mentioning, even still now, Vince waits in Gorilla to shove guys and do things to joke around. And he held that over that man's head and made him miss a WrestleMania bonus. It troubled
me. Be specific about what Vince McMahon held over Titus O'Neil's head.
Oh, Oh, he held over the fact that the black man had the gall to tell him to say ladies first and allow his daughter, who's supposed to be the bastion of feminism, to go ahead of him instead of cutting across I can't even remember, it was the Daniel Bryan retirement. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And so
he grabbed his arm, and he grabbed his arm too. Yeah. I believe.
Yeah. Wait, I'm talking to Mr. Bruce Magoo.
Is this a podcast?
Yes, this is the podcast.
That's one smart kid. Send him to Green. Is he ready for first grade? Send him. You can send him now. Send him to Greensboro. Set him up in an apartment, and then he can be in my class this year. It'll work out.
Well, he's still got to go through kindergarten first, Bruce. So
he's ready.
We'll work it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, Mr. Bruce said he could sneak in the first grade.
Me?
Yeah.
My grade?
Yeah, first grade, yeah.
He's sneaking to my grade?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we got to tell him.
He's a teacher.
Tell him we got Crystal the class guinea pig.
They have a guinea pig in their class. Her name is Crystal.
Crystal
is a name, and also it's a stone, but that's beside the point. It's a guinea pig. You like guinea pigs. Yeah, so you can play with Crystal the guinea pig. No, here, okay, let me finish up with Mr. Bruce, and then I'll be right with you, Magoo.
It is a podcast.
It is a podcast, yes. You can use the tablet. You can read Spider-Man.
Do they need Spider-Man?
Yeah, you have my comic book app on there. You can go to Marvel Unlimited. Okay, well, yeah, that's right. You don't know how to read. We'll work on that. So, yeah, so... This has gone off the rails.
I know I did that.
It's okay. I'm sorry, sir.
Pictures is reading, too.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, you can. Yes, I know. The troubles of a five-year-old.
Drama.
Yeah, yeah, he got that from his mother. He learned,
I'm sure.
That at Duke. When
sure.
Play for the foul. Play for the foul.
I'm sure. It's gamesmanship.
Yes.
All right.
I always have to watch myself on the stairs because he might trip me.
Yeah, I'm thinking the wife isn't in the room. That's just a guess.
Oh, no, she's downstairs. She can't hear me.
Exactly. All right. So, Jason, what else do you have for us after we've gone through the family sitcom?
That's so good. I'll tell you what, Rich, that was adorable. I prefer that off-mic conversation to the one that Joe had with Heyman, so I like that one right there. Final question. What's the bigger money match for WrestleMania, Lesnar versus Reigns or Reigns versus Cena? What do you go with?
I think that's the question that we start to get an answer to on Sunday night, Rich.
I think, okay, I'm going to pull a Travis. And I'm going to say the biggest money match is the one that they don't have the grapefruits to throw out there, and that's Reigns versus Rock. But between those two, I would go with Cena.
Well, I mean, that is a big money match, but I can't imagine Rock at this point in his life wanting to get in the ring with Lesnar. But that is the Lesnar going, I'm gonna kill the movie star and he'll never make another movie again.
No. Him and his cousin, Bruce. Reigns
is
what I said.
Oh, Reigns and Rock. Reigns with Rock.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Excuse me. All right. Sorry about that.
No.
Yeah. I kind of think, even though they've made progress with Reigns, and even though they want to build up SummerSlam, I still would play the long game here. I still would keep Reigns and Lesnar away from each other and keep making progress until WrestleMania. And if you don't make progress, that's another thing. But keep making and pull that card at WrestleMania. John Cena versus Roman Reigns would be big, and I bet that's where we're headed. I bet we're going to see Reigns and Lesnar at SummerSlam. And I'm not like saying it'd be the end of the world at all, but I just kind of think that might be better. I'm really interested in you know the half and half deal of John Cena sucks and, you know, Roman and booing Roman Reigns and put them in the same ring together at the same time at WrestleMania. That would be so WWE and so many ways. Holy smoke.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'd look forward to that? You know what I look forward to that, guys? And Rich and I talked about this last week, Bruce. I think you have that match at WrestleMania. John Cena, in a way, channels The Miz, channeling Vince McMahon on Roman Reigns. I'd be very interested to see the promos leading up to that match and using Cena to get Reigns really fired up, because Cena did more than hold his own against The Rock. I would say he beat The Rock verbally. Imagine what he would do to Reigns and what he could bring out of him. That's what I'd be very intrigued by.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the promos would be something. Although I wasn't all that crazy about John Cena's SmackDown promo, and we'll talk about that. Probably talk about that with Wade Keller on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. But any more comments with that, Rich?
Yeah, I think I completely agree with Jason, especially about. Then my only question would be if when it's time for the Cena Reigns promos, unlike with The Rock, where they wanted to bring him in as a celebrity, but they also wanted to take their shots, kind of like you were saying, the dividends or the for him abandoning them. So it was kind of okay for him to mention that The Rock had his notes written on his hand. I don't think Vince would want Cena to show Roman up that badly. Because when The Rock got shown up with that one, with the hand, I thought, hand to God, that he was going to go over there and throttle John Cena.
Yeah, that was, I thought that was unprofessional, but that was interesting. But yeah, no, they're not going to pull that on, you know, Roman and John Cena are loyal. I mean, that's what John Cena told me on TV again and again.
And it's kind of like it's kind of like the New Day thing. I know we didn't talk about it that much, but that New Day rap battle, they crossed some lines and.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Number one, I want to say this. Wale. Now, the other thing I want to say is I thought they had a great line and they didn't have the guts to say it, which was not R-rated, X-rated. That was X-rated.
Yeah.
You know,
their PG, the TV PG average, bringing it down.
Just say it. And it's gonna, like, you're going to get away with that. That's not going to kill anybody. That was fun. I thought that was good. And I thought Wale was really good. So I enjoyed that. Although there's a part of me that's like, you got one side is prison and the other side is, tap dancing, and that kind of bugs me a little bit. But yeah, I thought that came off really well, and I thought the gotcha lines were good and not too far. Yeah. So, yeah.
So who won that, you reckon? Because I was looking at the reaction online, and that was very most people thought the Usos did, but a lot of people thought the segment was crap, and a lot of people thought the segment was good. I enjoyed the segment, but geez, they really hammered each other on their appearance, didn't they? I mean, they really cut each other to shreds, and a lot of it was based on appearance.
Well, that's typically how battle raps go, though. And the rule is with most battle raps, speaking as the resident black person, but I have seen some.
You are the resident black person. What are you talking about?
I know. Torch contributor and resident black person. No, there's Travis, so I'm the second person. The rule is you can't get physical, because that's the point. And I think, Jason, toward the point where we were making a few minutes ago about The Rock and Cena with their promos and how fiery it is and could be with Roman, you notice they didn't go certain places with people that were extra sensitive. I think, for me, in my personal opinion, I think Xavier is fine with the Page tape, and he kind of comes out smelling like a rose, for lack of a better phrase. But they didn't mention, for instance, I know Kofi is very sensitive about the degenerative nature of his pecs.
Ah.
And how they concave outward. And they didn't mention anything. That would have been the first thing if this was like a quote-unquote shoot. They mentioned Big E's fat or Big E's big. It's like, Big E doesn't care if you say anything. He's like, okay, I am. But when it comes to Kofi, I know from several instances of interviews, and he did the Art of Wrestling, and talked about the degeneration. How can I not say degeneration after they had Degeneration X? Of his pec muscles and how that led to, kind of like Jericho has the same thing. It's just years of use and the muscles stop firing. And Scott Steiner has it. If you look at him, well, before the clown show they did on Sunday.
But yeah, you know, yeah, guys, just on another point, just quickly with that before I let you go. So now with this feud, right, I'm hoping that New Day sort of raise up to the Usos level, because I think the Usos act is really, really strong. So I'm hoping that coming out of this feud, Bruce, we get to see that fire from the New Day that was sort of lacking in the Wyatt family feud. Like, we thought they were going to go there, but they never did. You know, I'd like to see Big E fire up here, not be that lovable teddy bear who just cracks all these jokes. Like, I want to see something come out of New Day where they're bringing the fire to the Usos, because I feel like it's all one way. The Usos are trying to have this strong, hardcore, serious act, and I don't want them to be dragged down by the New Day.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of it. And I don't know that we're going to get that, because I think when they did the Wyatt family and the New Day, there was that moment where it was getting serious and they just completely backed off. And I think it's protect the merchandise sales, even though I think the merchandise sales will be fine with this. But I don't know. The Usos are making progress and they should have those belts, but I'd like to see this kind of come to an end and New Day go and do their gimmicks and Usos get involved with someone else, which, by the way, I should mention this, that, Wade Keller will be interviewing at the in Waterloo, Iowa, at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. He will be doing a Torch Talk Live with American Alpha, with the two members of American Alpha. So, and I suspect I might be kibitzing in that a little bit, as I did with Bob Backlund and Iron Sheik. So, again, something.
Oh, and Bruce, don't sell yourself short either, because you're on a panel.
Yeah, I saw that. Indie wrestling, that's going to be interesting, because I wonder if they have – I have definite opinions about indie wrestling, so I'd be kind of looking forward to that too. And to be on a panel with Jerry Briscoe, who just comes from the origins of my wrestling, my pro wrestling, is real and did everything in the business and is a really sharp guy. That's going to be fun. That's going to be something. So, yeah. That's kind of where I am with New Day and the Usos. But I thought that I thought that thing was funny. I thought it wasn't too long. I thought it wasn't I thought it was a pretty cool deal. I wish they'd do that and then drop about five or six other comedy segments so that would stand, the ones that are good would stand out. So
yeah, and I think they should do a better job of. I'm glad after so many years Wale got on TV, because for people who don't know, he funded money for guys like Apollo Crews and Cedric Alexander to get airtime, to get seen by WWE guys, because even though he's a rapper, he's a huge wrestling fan. And every year around WrestleMania, he does Wale Mania, where a ton of WWE guys, ton of independent guys, Court Bauer and his crew show up. And the WWE guys usually show up in a way where it's like, we can't be on screen, so like we're gonna be over here, so just don't say anything. But he has their respect, and I think it's really cool that rock and wrestling's become rap and wrestling in the last 10, 15 years in terms of both lyrics. Nailed it. Everything's going off.
Yep, cool. It wouldn't be me. So yeah, but yeah, I think so too. Yeah, yeah, he definitely knows his stuff, and it came across. He was comfortable. He, and he knew the role to play. He wasn't trying to, be too smart for the room, and he knew exactly how to do it. So yeah, that was cool. I'm gonna say it again. Wale. Okay, there you are.
There we go.
So all right, Rich, appreciate it. Jason, always appreciate your contributions. I'll be back with Bruce Mitchell Audio Show this weekend for Torch VIP members. For more information on that, listen to this message.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.